Birth, the Grand Division, Chapter 17. Semyaza is an ageless being compared to mortal humans. He had been to many worlds and seen the process of greed and debauchery with which they could be manipulated into eternal subservience to the Dark Prince. His 200 special operations soldiers that traveled with him to Earth after the flood of Noah had a variety of skills. They taught women how to use rejection and beauty to drive men crazy with lust. They taught men about weapons and the art of alchemy. The latter was pure genius in that it was originally billed as the black art of turning base metals into gold. It was actually even more insidious than that. Alchemy was the ability to make gold from something as worthless as paper, and then later from something that cost even less to produce, little ones and zeros on a digital file. They watched as the greed of men surpassed even the expectations of the Watchers, as even within a few generations less than 85 people controlled 90% of the world's money. These intelligent and powerful humans actually believed that the value was in the money. The power that money gave people was the second best drug in the universe. Oh, it was crippling in its effect on the eternal soul that accumulated more than they could even possibly spend in 1,000 lifetimes. But the real reverence was given to the lust and envy of those who wanted that very same thing. The very wealthy lived their miserable lives in a prison of bodyguards, food tasters, and legal agreements with everything from employees to sex partners. Millions of other humans would live vicariously through the imagined benefits of that much wealth. The process captured nearly everyone. Semyaza's best genius for convincing humans to choose evil of their own free will was in a master plan called religion. Getting the right formula for each world is difficult. Once the creator leaves his work behind and moves to the next world, the field is left to the tares to grow between the wheat, so to speak. The general idea is to make men fear death, of course. But the real value comes in making men fear eternal punishment. This, however, proved nearly impossible for all people. Humans have an almost insatiable urge to abdicate the responsibility for their own life condition to someone else. Women abdicated to their male partner. Men abdicated to their boss or their government or even to God himself. It took a few thousand years to figure this out, but humans like to have a point of focus. They like to have a formula or a recipe that they know will work every time. Of course, it does not work every time, but the idea was to make them believe that if it did not work, it was only because they lacked faith. If they would just have more faith, they would receive joy and fulfillment in their lives, even in poverty. Oh, the sweet mastery of this idea was almost more successful than they could ever have hoped. To prove a point, Semyaza recovered a simple meteor from space. Oh, it fell to Earth and caused quite a bit of damage in the general vicinity of the impact, but it was easy enough to find. He cleaned it off and hauled it to the middle of the deserts of Saudi Arabia and told a story of how this rock had special powers. After all, it came from heaven, right? In less than 1,500 years, the seed of Lucifer, the literal descendants of his sexual encounter with Eve in the Garden of Eden, had managed to focus all their religious energy on it. Visiting this plain old chunk of space debris became a basic building block of a successful journey to heaven. The city built around the rock became legendary. Mecca became synonymous with the term pilgrim. Now there are nearly 1.7 billion Muslims that had to make this trip to Mecca once in their lifetime in order to reach heaven. Semyaza did not find humor in much after living on Earth for so many thousands of years, but reflection on this project always made him smile. 25% of the world's population was now worshiping a space rock, all in the name of a deity that never existed. Lucifer only found it mildly irritating because they did not bow down and worship him. But that was merely a flaw in his ego, after all. The results were the same. None of them would ever reach heaven. They would all be permanent residents in the realm of darkness. Semyaza secretly wished he could see the look on their faces when they arrived, expecting to be lavished with gifts, the best food imaginable, and sexual pleasures forever, only to see the same dust and destitution in which they had wallowed for their entire mortal lives. The truth is that we manifest almost exactly the kind of heaven we deserve by our own actions, beginning, of course, with our own thoughts. These moments alone, with the monitors and the solitude of NORAD's mountain refuge, had become sweet to Semyaza. Thousands of years of war, smoke, death, screaming for vengeance and cursing God for abandoning them were also music to his ears, but beautifully punctuated by this respite while humans slept. It was a flaw in the human design, he reasoned. The mortal body is otherwise quite efficient, able to eat almost anything and survive. With good food in the proper amounts and copious amounts of exercise, they can become quite powerful and quick. In numbers, working together, they can be lethal, even for a watcher. Using the weapons shown to them by his soldiers, they could destroy planets if they possessed the will. But they are weak and lack resolve, mostly. The governments of men are infected with politics, the dark and nefarious machinations of religion. They moved too slowly for real war. The seed of Adam, the descendants of Eve's sexual encounters with Adam, feigned genocide, even when commanded to do so by God or his angels. They just have too much of a vein of mercy and charity running through them. It is difficult to get them to go to war, actually. Semyaza usually has to infiltrate their ranks of leadership with his own agents to get them to declare war. They like battle. They just don't like to declare war. But war was one of Semyaza's favorite recruiting methods. Both sides were trained to hate. Both sides were trained to dehumanize the opponent and to kill him without remorse. The beauty was that even if they did not die, the training ruined them forever. The hatred they felt became part of them, and when they could not resolve that hatred and go back to who they were before the war, they would kill themselves by the thousands. The casualties of war went on for decades after the fighting on the battlefield was over. The fact that ex-soldiers were dropped back into a society that had no concept of what they were going through meant that society was also drawn into the cycle of misery. Yes, war was truly a work of art in the process of recruiting human souls for the Dark Prince. It took centuries of planning and patience, but there were currently 54 countries embroiled in a low-level war at all times. In any given 30-day period, more than 3,000 people were injured and 300 people killed by Islamic terrorists. They were ghosts, without any uniform and without any profile that could be tracked. The attackers acquired no training and no salary. They were standing in line for duty. Semyaza had provided for them a religion so empty of promise that it virtually guaranteed debilitating ignorance and poverty, which was a wonderful breeding ground for blame for something other than God failing to show up with the blessings. They could be pointed at anyone that had even the appearance of prosperity and shot like an exploding grenade. The innocent lives they took in each suicidal homicide would follow them to the judgment hall and testify against them like passengers in a taxi to hell. The survivors became even more vicious and deadly assassins as their hearts were filled with vengeful rage, willing to abandon their own salvation to silence the pain, tearing mercy from their bones like piranha in the river of misery in which they gasped for every breath. "Good morning, Master," came the fresh and human voice of Wes Morlaix behind him. "Your uniform is looking crisp as usual," said Semyaza dryly. These human formalities of greeting and parting were wasteful to him. It was like ending emails with, "Thanks so much, Wes." Like the person who got the email had no clue who it was from in the first place. Still, it was their way, so he tolerated it for now. "I have begun implementing my plan," said Wes. "It's just the preliminary steps, mind you. The groundwork will take a while to get in place." "This is your plan for a mass seizure of souls before the union of the polarity comes apart?" "Yes, my master." "People are harboring a deep resentment for the seed of Lucifer," he said. "Resentment is a term reserved for the disenfranchised, not the privileged," said Semyaza. "Not necessarily. Humans like to unload the blame for failure onto someone else when they can. But they also can join in a kind of group hatred for something or someone. If you ask them, they will deny it. But if you provide them a chance to anonymously push their portion of the button, even if it means silence is a form of refusal to protest, they will do it," said Wes with an exceptionally giddy tone to his voice. "Ah, I remember the choice poor Pilate gave to the people. In his feeble attempt to stop the crucifixion of Jesus, he offered the murderous Barabbas to them as an option. I think they almost would have rather seen Barabbas be crucified and then do Jesus later. So indecisive were those poor Jews. No, it was the clever placement of the high priests throughout the crowd, shouting for Barabbas to be set free, that was so amusing to watch." He laughed now, with his booming voice echoing off the NORAD chamber walls. Semyaza's mighty shoulders shook with the power of it. The poor Jews looked around and saw that the high priests were planning to crucify Jesus, and they began yelling in support, like they were at a football game, cheering the running back who had broken away from the defense. He bent down to look at Wes from his 12-foot point of view. "What is your plan, General?" Wes was not intimidated by Semyaza anymore. He had no fear of death, per se. He believed there was no memory of pain on the other side. He himself had been in battle and had been knocked unconscious by blasts that fell too close. There was no pain. It was easy to die. "You are a master, to be sure," he began. "This religion you have created to a god that does not exist and the ultimate idol of a piece of molten iron from space for a cult that says all idols are evil is the most amazing thing I have ever seen." "Get to the point, General," said Semyaza, like he was speaking to a teenager who was about to ask to borrow the car for a date. "This religion, as I was saying, has now grown to about 25% of the global population. It not only influences the one who say they are believers, but it also affects the ones who do not. In other words, 100% of the world is now focused on Islam." He paused for a moment to let that sink in. "Tell me, Master, did you do this by yourself?" "No. I could not pass for an angel to the likes of Muhammad. I sent Kobabel. He is a master of the stars. He can tell a story better than any of my associates. He also appears in physical form as much more glorious than me. He told Muhammad he was the angel Gabriel, and the rest is history, as they say," said Semyaza. "It can't be that simple," said Wes. "How did you establish the doctrine of death and mayhem to be a religion of peace?" "That is the beauty of zeal, my good general," he began. "Zeal is when a person is motivated by personal reward without regard to knowledge. The individual is promised wealth, power, dominion, sexual prey beyond measure, and eventually salvation. In exchange, he has to do the will of the being with whom he made the deal. In this case, it was to spread their religion to the entire world using the sword. But it had no merits to offer women at all. In fact, it turned them into nothing more than mindless breeders. How could that possibly sell? Women are forceful and vindictive animals themselves, said Wes, recalling the punishment delivered by his own mother. Eve was the mother of all living, General. Her legacy needed to be destroyed forever, and this was the most perfect way to accomplish that, said Semyaza. Semyaza was now showing some pride in his work. He rocked his head back as though to look up into the lights for applause. So, why are you so curious about my greatest work on the planet? I want to nuke Mecca, said General Morlaix with confidence. Semyaza slowly raised his arms up over his head and opened his hands wide. He heaved his chest up and began to speak in a tone Wes had never heard before. You mortals are all the same. You have looked over the creation of my hands and my will, and now you want to take the control of the whole of it. The words were so loud that the walls of the mountain over them reverberated. Wes was unmoved. He could see clearly now. I propose that doing this deed will show Muslims that their deity does indeed not exist. For why would he be unable to protect their holiest piece of ground? It would cause three things to happen, began Wes. First, it will plunge billions of Muslims into doubt and confusion. A good percentage, perhaps 20 million of them, will go charging out of their houses, killing everyone in sight. That's a good thing. The rest will weep and wail because they now have no way to get to heaven. Their own pilgrimage will be impossible, and they will curse themselves for not sacrificing earlier and making the trip to Mecca. The third is even more glorious. The other 75% of the world will rejoice that hundreds of thousands of Muslims were killed at Mecca and that their stupid rock was destroyed. They will feel like they have been freed of the blight of Islam, and they will secretly praise the persons responsible for this act of terror. Wes was beaming with his plan. He knew it was the type of genius that Semyaza would like, and it certainly would win billions of souls for the Dark Prince in a matter of weeks. They have another holy site, you know, said Semyaza, urging Wes to complete his vision. Nuke Medina as well, said Wes with ice on his voice. Semyaza lowered his arms and slowly stopped huffing in defense of his millennial plan of genius. He had played chess with Wes hundreds of times, and he admitted that the general was getting better. Still, the general had to think for a while between moves, which irritated him. It seemed to him that with this plan, Wes had taken his queen and was moving in for checkmate. It was a bold move. Time, after all, was now of the essence. They didn't have thousands of years to plan. They had perhaps a matter of months. He recalled his recent counseling session with Lucifer, where his progress was criticized as Lucifer had said words to the effect of, "What have you done for me lately? Let's say that I approve of this plan. How will you accomplish it?" "What do you need of me?" asked Semyaza. "There is nothing supernatural about this, Master," said Wes. "How large?" asked Semyaza. 2 devices for each city. No more than 150 kilotons should do nicely. No fallout to speak of, but the entire city will be covered in green glass," said Wes. "Your timing?" "It will not be a state-sponsored event, if that's what you mean," said Wes. "You have control of the situation? Men cannot be trusted, you know," said Semyaza. "It's a matter of motivation," said Wes. "Money can always be matched." "Money is a poor motivator. So is hate. I'm counting on love to carry us through," said Wes. "Please, don't patronize me," said Semyaza. "I can get men to blow themselves up every day out of hatred. There is no planning needed for a vest full of explosive. This plan takes skills that are rare. Plutonium can be traced directly to the reactor from which it came, and a secret resolve that the world has only seen twice before, said Wes. Hatred is a momentary thing, stirred up to a froth and poured on a line of horsemen before they charge at the enemy to carve them to pieces. Love endures in silence and peace until it snaps like a rubber band pulled too tight. Love will carry these lovely devices to their places in destiny like the bee, carrying the seed of life itself to feed the world. Semyaza put his hands together and folded them into a gently rubbing clasp. He thought about the wave of souls that would flood into darkness all at once. But then he thought about the virtual ocean of souls that would follow as the union of the Polarity Cataclysm wrecked the world and smashed all the works of men into dust. Surely billions would die. Billions of people harboring the hatred of freedom and liberty would die and be plunged into darkness. And then those harboring the hatred of Islam would come rejoicing, and billions more loving the idea that Islam and its phony god, its silly desert rock, were destroyed once and for all. I will permit this, but I intend to watch it closely, said Semyaza. I will keep you posted, but you must promise not to interfere or send your soldiers to interfere. If you do, it could provide a get-out-of-darkness-free card for a billion souls. By the way, I thought you should know I tried to take care of that Shelley LaSalle thing, said Wes. I saw the report. She survived, you know, said Semyaza. Yes, well, cars are tougher than I thought, said Wes. These kinds of mistakes cause me great anxiety, General. We won't see her on the air anymore. The rest of Riker's little team are in my sights as well, said Wes. Don't miss, said Semyaza. We can't have the players know the rules as well as the coaches, now can we, said Wes. I'll be watching from the skybox, said Semyaza. Wes smiled as he turned to walk away from Semyaza. He was somewhat surprised that he didn't get a bigger reaction from his intention to nuke Mecca. It took Semyaza 1,000 years to develop the religion of Islam. Jesus had been risen for over 600 years when the story of the visit from the angel Gabriel to Muhammad was first created. Although their religion was originally established to do away with all idols, the Black Stone, which many still believe was a meteorite, was venerated at the Kaaba in pre-Islamic pagan times. According to Islamic tradition, it was set intact into the Kaaba's wall by the Islamic prophet Muhammad in the year 605 AD, 5 years before his first revelation. Since then, it has been broken into a number of fragments, probably by treasure hunters, selling fragments to wealthy tourists, and is now cemented into a silver frame in the side of the Kaaba. Its physical appearance is that of a fragmented dark rock, polished smooth by the hands of pilgrims. Islamic tradition holds that it fell from the heavens as a guide for Adam and Eve to build an altar. It was a most clever plan, and Wes had tremendous respect for the creature who could deceive billions of people into worshipping a rock, and then into spreading their religion by the sword. The sheer beauty of the mantra, convert or die, was perhaps the most powerful force for darkness ever devised. More than 1 billion people had been killed in the most gruesome and unspeakable ways in the name of one god or another, but Islam was the champion of genocide. Now here they were at the end of the age, with the two earths about to come apart. The score would be taken now. The winner would not take everything home, but the losers would be weeping until the dawn of the next creation. The strategy of capturing an entire race of beings was staggering, and it thrilled General Westmoreland just to be a part of it. His part in this final stage was going to be nothing short of epic.